If you'll go ahead and make your way to Luke chapter 10. We've got five verses that we're going to go through here. This morning we're starting in verse 38, making our way to verse 42. I think it's going to touch your life. I think it certainly has mine as I've moved through it this morning or this week. In 1990, Congress approved $1.5 billion for an ambitious project, a project that would be able to explore the galaxy. People said that we might be able to find out things that we've never even conceived of before. We might even be able to find out the origin of the universe. That's a pretty big ticket. 1990, $1.5 billion. Sounds a bit like chump change today from the stuff we hear. A lot of money. But there was a problem. See, this thing that was approved was the Hubble telescope. And when they were planning for it, everything was digitally thought through. The plans were exquisite. The work was profound. Over years, this took place to get them to the point that they could launch this thing into space. As they sat around the monitors, getting ready to gasp at what they saw, the images that were coming back were blurry. They were blurry. And people began to scramble around saying, what in the world's going on? Is there some catastrophic failure? Let's look at the designs. As they pored over the plans, they realized that the telescope itself, it has a particular angle to it so that it can capture the light coming in. What they found is that when that telescope was ground or shaped, or however it's said in the better term that I can find today, they found that it had been off by 1/50th of someone's head of hair, just by a hair. 1/50th it was off when it had been shaped. Now, I would think, given that I don't work in that field, that's not a big deal. Can't be that big of a deal. But when it comes to seeing the heavens clearly, it's an enormous deal. Matter of fact, let me show you some pictures up there. It's three slides. The first is, if you notice the one that's on the left, that's what it looked like before it was fixed. On the right is after. It took them 3 years to send people up to enable to adjust it or fix it. But notice the difference between a perspective that is off on the left that is focused on the right. Notice the next one. Because that's black and white. Notice that. Believe me, without the lights in here, you could see it a lot better. Much crisper. The next one. Can you see that a little better? Yeah, it's profound. What they found is if they didn't have the right perspective, they would never be able to see the heavens the way that they wanted, the way they should. They'd never be able to learn. They'd never be able to process. They'd never be able to grow. Now, they're looking at scientific endeavors. I think we're going to see in our passage today, there's a village that's 2 miles east of Jerusalem that is facing the exact same problem. Doesn't mean that they have something in space and a telescope or anything like that. But it's a wrong perspective, a blurry vision. A misunderstanding of what it means to actually be a follower of Christ. What you're going to find today is I've trafficked in this same blurry vision. I bet you have too. You see, sometimes we can be so busy in life. Sometimes we can be so busy in ministry that we're doing all sorts of things for Christ, caring for our family, working hard. Some of us or full-time ministry, we're doing things energetically for the Lord. We're excited about it. We're planning things. We're executing things. And we're so busy for Christ that we forget to be with Christ. There's a difference. Do you know, I've known people that know much more about the Bible than I could ever hope to know. But over time, they begin to avoid spending time in the Word, and they're busy in ministry. And some of them might have even rationalized, well, I'm doing a lot of things for the Lord. I don't have time to spend in the Word. And over time, when you put those minutes into hours and those hours into days and those days into weeks and those weeks into months, I've seen people that I considered spiritual titans drift. Because they forget, they misunderstand, or sometimes they even ignore. Your activity for Christ never replaces your intimacy with Christ. Can't. You've got to fight against it. I fight against it. I love to be busy. You know, there's certain times in my life that I've hit the apex of what I thought was pure fulfillment. Back when we had a fax going, I could have a fax coming in, an email going out, and I could be reading something else, and I'd be all doing this thing, phones ringing, I'm answering it. I'm thinking, man, I'm busy. I love this. Problem is, I could get lost in that. And if I live in that place too often, feeling like I'm being productive and providing for my family and doing ministry and caring for people, over enough time, my soul begins to dry up. See, my busyness can never replace my intimacy with Christ. I've got to simply rest. I've got to simply sit. Years ago, I started noticing this in my life, so I determined that I needed to cultivate quietness. I wouldn't listen to the radio when I went down the road. I had to work for this. I had to struggle for this. I had to fight for this. I don't think it's gotten any better. I think people get fatigued when they have conversations with people. I think people get fatigued when they have conversations with God because they love the busyness. Feels almost like wasted time. Today, you're going to find out it's not wasted time. Matter of fact, it's required time. It's a painful lesson that Martha is going to learn today, but you're going to see her in her life. You're going to see yourself. It's very important that we understand this. Something I want you to know is that the priorities that we have speak to the affections that we're cultivating our heart at any one time, that then our perspective reveals them. The idea of whatever your perspective is, if it's shifting, if it's off, like you're going to see in our passage today, it's because it's speaking to an affection that's been misplaced. It's not random. It's very specific. It's the portal to your soul. When you see your anxiety going up with other people, it could be because you're doing what Martha's doing. When you see demands of God because you're at a stage of life or a place in life you don't like, and you begin to question God, it could be because you're an awful lot like Martha in that place. You can know this, your perspective is off if you start feeling those things, and that means your affection is misplaced. Very important to make that connection. When you start blaming other people for issues in your life and not taking responsibility, your perception's off. Things get blurry. You're not seeing as you should. I think you'll see that pretty clearly in this passage today. If you look over there, verse 38, we're going to walk through this. Five verses that I think are going to punch you in the mouth. Now, as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. She had her sister Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. She went up to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me." I can't make the inflection that I'm sure is there, because these are sisters, remember. I think that Mary's the younger sister. That does just me bringing that up. Verse 41, "But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her.'" Now, this moment takes place on the heels of several things I want to remind you of in our passage that Jesus sends out to 72 in verses 1 through 20. Public ministry, what does he do when they come back? He corrects their understanding. We're in demons and headlocks and casting out illness, and they're really excited. Hold on. "Be glad that your name is written in the book of life." It's clarification. Public ministry clarification. Then we have the situation where Jesus celebrates the sovereign work of God in salvation in verses 21 and 24, that God has shown what he has shown, the kingdom realities, the people that never would have been chosen. It's the slow kid being picked for number one in kickball in middle school. No one would ever pick that. That's who God picks. That's who God works through. He doesn't show up in Jerusalem and recruit the Pharisees. He picks people that are fishermen, that are people that aren't high IQ. That's how God operates. We walk through that. Then he starts talking about a parable through an interaction with a lawyer of the Good Samaritan. We talked about this last week. The parable was meant to crush the lawyer. The lawyer thought he was a SEAL Special Forces, spiritually hitting it out of the park every time, always successful. Jesus gives the story in which a priest and a Levite walk past a guy who's been beaten up, left for dead. In other words, the people that should have cared and should have treated someone as their neighbor, Leviticus 19, they would have known that. The idea that you love God, love your neighbor as yourself. This guy slides into the conversation, well, who's my neighbor? Wanting to find out how little I have to do. Can I disconnect from the sinners and the prostitutes? They can't be my neighbors, right? We're told his thoughts because he's trying to justify himself. He's trying to cut on the dotted lines of precision of legalistic thinking and living. He wants to be the star in the show. Jesus makes the star of the story the Good Samaritan, as we would say today. Now, that blows my mind. The Samaritans were never stars. And effectively he's saying, be like the Samaritan. Not to pump him up to have another kind of aim, another target. Not for us to go, I want to be a Samaritan. No. The point is, none of us are as good as the Good Samaritan. None of us would be as that generous. None of us would be that kind. We're the guy in the ditch. Jesus is the Samaritan. He's the one who loves in a way that is profound and mind-blowing. So we go from that more public conversation now to a private party in Bethany. It's most likely about 2 miles away from Jerusalem. That's where this situation takes place. That's where this shift in perspective occurs. This is where the private devotion versus public ministry becomes the main dish. Moves from serving people to sitting before Christ. And this intentionality, Luke wants us to understand that I think that ministry activity never replaces ministry intimacy. So I think that's why this is in the story. The first thing I think we need to look at in verse 38 through the first of 40, the first point is a wrong perspective makes good things ultimate things. Hear that. Very important. A wrong perspective makes good things ultimate things. Now, entering this vision, this Martha welcomes people into her house. That's a good thing. She's busy. She's excited. Hospitality is deeply valued in the Jewish culture. Travelers depended on generosity. Matter of fact, we know from Genesis chapter 18 that the heavenly visitors were welcomed by Abraham. This is the DNA of the Jewish people. In this moment, she's welcoming people and she's busy and with activity. She's making sure that the serving places are just set. She's making sure things are clean, things are swept. Get that animal out of the house and also those kids, whatever's going on. You can picture the scene, can't you? And it says there that Martha was distracted with much serving in verse 40. This idea of distracted is the idea of pulled away. Dragged in a different direction, overburdened. The imperfect tense has the idea it's a continual thing. It's just this tension that she's feeling. She's out of her mind. She wants to do the best that she can for the Lord. But the problem is Martha's issue is not her service, because that's good. The issue for Martha is her perspective, as if her service is the most important thing in the moment. I think that's the idea here. A good thing, when it becomes an ultimate thing, is called an idol. And I'll tell you, doesn't it slip into the story? Don't you feel that? She's doing the best she can. She's living up to the standard. She's making things happen. She wants everything just so. The problem is, in that moment, her affections are for that. Not for Christ. Not for who he is and why he's visiting, to be a blessing to people. So that good thing becomes an ultimate thing which starts spinning everything out of control. We look at this passage. It's got to admit, it's easy to do this today. Incredibly easy. Career advancements. I'm doing this for my family. But all of a sudden, those out-of-town trips become more and more and more. The hours of the office become more and more and more. And what became a good thing, I want to provide for my family, all of a sudden is becoming an ultimate thing. So you're not caring for your kids like you should. You're interested and excited about being busy. Things at home with the kids aren't as fulfilling as this. This is much more fulfilling. Do you see how it slips in? It's like kudzu. It's there. It's like that weed. You sprayed, you've taken care of it, you thought you were diligent. You take your eye off the lawn for 1 second, and all of a sudden those little weeds come up. I think that happens in your soul. Not only career, parenting, success becomes the ultimate. Looking good in front of other people. It's not so much that you've got to discipline your kid. In the moment that they do it, you don't want to look bad. So all of a sudden, a good thing, parenting, becomes the ultimate thing. How I'm seen by other people. Financial security becomes the ultimate. Ministry accomplishment. Reputation. Calvin said that our hearts are a perpetual factory of idols. In other words, it just churns these things out. And it's just in one moment, we can go from being balanced and God-centered to being imbalanced and making idols. Have you ever found that to be true in your life? If it's not true in your life, come talk to me. I got plenty of examples for you. Problem with idolatry is we often think, we think about wood and stone, and we think of statues. Modern times, it's much more respectable. It looks like overcommitment, exhaustion, constant activity without spiritual intimacy. Teachers prepare lessons while neglecting their students' care. Parents provide for their children, but they aren't disciplining their kids, and they're not discipling them. We make impressive ministries and churches, but we starve our souls. Eventually, given enough time, it'll be seen. But the point for you today, as we venture into this through the life and example of Martha, is a wrong perspective makes good things ultimate things, and life gets blurry. The things that you were meant to see, the constellations of God's grace, now become blurry, distorted, wrong-headed. So we go through this. I've mentioned some things, but I want to mention some more because if I hurry passage, we just stay in the text without drilling into our lives. I think sometimes we escape unscathed in times we shouldn't escape unscathed. So if you find yourself with an overscheduled family, I've got to ask dads, moms, why are you so busy? Is it because that good thing of keeping your kids active and their friends are playing those sports? It's become an ultimate thing. You're running around constantly. When you show up at the ball field, soccer, whatever you're playing, let me ask you this. I'm going to crawl into your lap for a moment. Do you think about sharing the gospel? Do you pray with your kids before you get out of the car, God, help us to express the truth of who you are in our actions and words? You see, in those moments, if you don't do that, my fear is that concave view of following Jesus Christ is slightly off. And you don't see him. You should see him. You're on a mission to make disciples. Go into all the world means as you are going, doesn't matter if it's a hairdresser or it's a sporting event. How can I represent Christ here and share Christ with somebody? And I'll tell you something, if you don't think that, moms, dads, your perspective is off. You're not seeing things the way you were meant to see them. Well, let's get away from that. Let me focus on the ministry-driven Christian. You show up, you do things, you're very, very busy. You're very, very active. You're involved with stuff. I've got to ask myself, do you open the Bible for personal nourishment or just to plan a lesson? Prayer, is it more functional than relational? I do it with people, I don't do it on my own. Spiritual life, is it more output driven or is it intimacy driven? I'll give you a great example of this. There was a guy years ago, another church, who was a part of the IT, and he was stringing together all the computers, and something happened with something went sideways, and I probably was involved with somehow sabotaging the entire computer system. And he was coming in after work, and I remember he was a little annoyed, and I said, I really appreciate the work you're doing. And he looks at me right in my eyes and goes, I'm not doing it for you. Wow. Wow. I said, really? He goes, yeah. And he stops and he kind of gathers himself and he says, I got to tell you why. He said, because if I was doing it for you, I would be really frustrated right now. I would be incredibly frustrated. You knuckleheads on staff don't have a foggy clue about computer systems. I was like, guilty. He said, but this is the thing. I'm not doing it for you. I've got to remember I'm doing this for the Lord, because if I don't remember I'm doing this for the Lord, and if I'm doing it for you, I'm going to lose my spiritual connection with him. I'm doing this unto the Lord, and I just submit to him that he has me here doing this. It's for my walk with him. I can't think about you in this moment or I'll get very frustrated. I walked away from there going, that's an awesome perspective. He's busy. But he hadn't lost his perspective of why he's busy. We've got to thread that needle, because you're going to be busy. I'm not talking about inactivity. Martha, I'm not saying don't be active, don't serve. Not saying that. I'm saying you've got to fight for the right perspective when you serve. This is not in any way saying quit soccer. Not in any way saying quit that ministry, you're overly busy. I'm not saying that. That's another conversation. But what I'm saying is don't lose your perspective in whatever you're doing. You've got to fight for that, people, just like Martha's fighting for it. You could be a career professional. You could be a connected social teenager who's thinking about likes and thumbs ups and all this other stuff, but all of a sudden you're losing your intimacy. You can't be alone. You don't spend time in the Word because you want that hit. You want that rush. You want to check something on your phone. Hold on a second. You're doing a lot of things, but where's your perspective? This is the stuff of life. This is 2 miles away from Jerusalem. And yet I find myself in the living room of this relationship. Don't you? Absolutely. Good things make terrible gods. Terrible gods. They don't bring peace. They produce anxiety. And that's one of the ways you know that you've lost your perspective. So let's see what she does with this. She's making a good thing service, an ultimate thing. Let's see what happens. Look at verse 40, second part of the verse. You're going to be shocked at this. At least you should. But I think you're going to see yourself in this verse. I see myself. She went up to him, meaning Jesus, and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me. Let's just stop with that first concept, do not care. And then we're going to get into this slide of self-love, I'm going to call it. Just stop for a second here. Be captured by that you do not care. It's really incredibly startling. She's frustrated at her sister. And now all of a sudden she's implicating Christ that he doesn't care. The entire incarnation of Christ is a giant banner across the heavens. I care. And because this lady is busy and her sister isn't helping, and she escalates it all the way to the second person of the Trinity, you don't care. That's amazing. At that point, I'm glad James and John at least weren't in proximity, because they would be going, let's call down fire on her. That's an amazing thing. You do not care that my sister's left me to serve alone. Tell her then to help me. She is so fixed on serving. It's so important to her. It's become an idol. And it's such a strong idol that she can't worship Christ. She leverages Christ. You see that? Sucks the life out of any intimacy. All we've got to get done is, I need help. That is the focus of worship. Man, I would love to drag Martha over the coals if it wasn't for the fact that I've done this kind of stuff. I've done this kind of stuff. I got not enough time to tell you. But let's look at this progression, this slide of self-love, I call it. This burden becomes personal. My sister has left me. My sister has left me. Martha moves from task to the person. She personalizes the situation. What has started out as a responsibility that she took on now becomes a relational frustration. You'll see that in your life. Pay attention. When your perspective is off, it goes from a thing, a service, something, to a person. It'll happen. Second thing, then the expectation becomes entitlement. Serve alone. I shouldn't have to carry this by myself. She's entitled all of a sudden. This happens in a moment. Why? Because her heart, it's an idol factory. Her expectation is hardened into entitlement. Then that frustration becomes accusation, what we talked about. Lord, you do not care. Martha's frustration with Mary becomes a subtle accusation against Jesus. She questions his awareness. She questions his care. And we're just in just moments. Then finally control, tell her, then to help me. She moves from request to instruction. In this moment, he's not the Lord, she is. Wow. Martha's attempting to direct Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, to what she wants, what she deserves, what she expects Jesus to do. She is spiritually misaligned. She is spiritually, her perspective is off. What was meant to see the heavens of the teaching of Christ for her is blurry. It's not shaped right. It's shaped around things that are good, but things that now become ultimate. She's lost in the moment. So she takes Jesus hostage. Martha's not just distracted. She's emotionally overwhelmed, relationally irritated, spiritually misaligned. Busyness has distorted her view of people and even of Christ. Notice then, at that point, if you just hide your eyes from the rest of the text, you could almost guess, what would I do if I was Christ? Don't do that because you'd be a terrible Christ. But I find it's stunning the way Jesus responds. Not an ounce of judgment, harshness, any of that. He just calmly and clearly says her name twice. Look there. Martha. Martha. Wow. Doesn't blow up. What are you talking about? What are you talking about, clean floors? I'm here. Doesn't do that. Martha, Martha. Reminds me of Luke 22, 31. When Jesus is talking to Peter. And Satan has desired to sift him. And he says, Simon, Simon. Tender. Compassionate, getting his attention, not hitting him over the head. Also, Saul, Saul, road to Damascus. It's in Acts 9:4. And he says, you are anxious and troubled about many things. Anxious has the idea of divided concern, inward anxiety. Think about it like a hurricane in your spirit. That's the idea. Troubled, not mere agitation, but disturbance, commotion. In other words, her busyness is exposing her theology. It's exposing what her affection is. It's displaced from God, so her perspective is off. How do you insulate yourself from that? Because as I go through this passage and I think of ways to connect this to life, I see this everywhere in life. I just do. You do. In family and commitment. So you go, thanks, Dan, for making me feel terrible. Help me correct it. Can I give you some advice? It's not that I'm going to have all the answer for a perfectly manicured schedule and rest, because you're not in this world. It's just never going to be that easy. But I do think the thing that will anchor you, the thing that anchors me, is personal time in the Word. Just is. There's this thing that I'm able to pick off the busyness and separate it when I have the intimacy. And I think I'd like to give you an example of somebody who's done that, because I often would imagine that family, moms struggle with this the most. We all struggle with it, but when it comes to kids, they are like fireworks every day. My son, I remember when he lit a flare in our living room. I've got to be honest, after I got the flare and got it out of the house, I thought to myself, I'm amazed that you fired this thing up. I mean, that's amazing. I think he was 6 years old at the time. That's impressive. Son after my own heart. Let me tell you about Susanna Wesley. 19 kids. 10 survived into adulthood. 9 died in infancy, and the others struggled, but 10 survived. Late 17th, early 18th century, that was a lot. That was amazing how many kids did survive. Despite her responsibilities, the intensity of her life, Susanna practically and intentionally structured to protect her time with God in the middle of what must have been chaos. She lived during a time of that. She did not wait for silence. She didn't wait for perfect conditions. She didn't wait for free time. She made space. It's said that she would take her apron, sit in the corner, throw her apron up over her head, and spend time with the Lord. And she did that enough that when she put her apron over her head, the kids knew, be quiet. Mom's having her quiet time. I think that's the kind of thing. It's not that you're going to figure out what exactly path and do this and don't do that. I don't think life's like that. I think you fill the space with a devotion to Christ, and then it starts beginning to shape your perspective. It starts to alter your affections, and then you're able to have a perspective that sees things clearly. So the demands of the job begin to be too much, and then you're sacrificing the family. You know to make an adjustment. When it comes to sports, you know to make an adjustment, because now we're doing this. We're not on a mission. We're just doing stuff. We're activity. It's not that busyness is ministry, but intimacy with Christ sets up ministry. You'll be able to understand that if you have that time with the Lord. Now, I've got to say, if you've not been protecting your time with the Lord, your perspective is already warped. So at this point, you've got to make a commitment. I'm going to do this, and can I tell you something? A commitment like that needs friends. You commit, I've not been spending time in the Lord. Tell somebody around you. Tell somebody in this church. Hey, help me do this. I'm going to ask you. You ask me. Really important. We're a lot stronger in our mind than in our lives. 4 biggest words in the Christian life. I can handle it. You're never meant to walk alone. You need a church. Whatever you find yourself, Martha assumes 3 things. Mary's wrong. She's right. Jesus should agree with her. She questions his care, correcting his priorities, attempting to control his response. A distracted heart quickly becomes a defensive heart. If you're overwhelmed, you'll start blaming people. Busyness just doesn't exhaust you, it distorts you. Unchecked responsibility often leads to unspoken resentment. Jesus centers her, Martha, Martha. And then notice what he says here when we get down to verse 42. The right perspective chooses what cannot be taken away. This is really important. The right perspective chooses what cannot be taken away. But one thing is necessary, Christ says. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. Now notice he doesn't relate to any serving. He doesn't talk at all about that. He doesn't downplay that. He simply prioritizes what is better in the moment. Says in verse 39, Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to his teaching. So that sets this moment up. She has the posture of a disciple. In this context, women, that would be unheard of. In other words, a woman sitting at the feet of a teacher would not be normal. This is unusual. This is special. She's going to take advantage of this. Jesus has been doing his ministry. We're 5 months or so away from him going to Jerusalem. She's heard of what's happened in the Galilean ministry. She's heard of the feeding of the 5,000. She's heard of the demons being exorcised. She's heard of the sickness being pushed back, the result of the fall being pushed back. The enemy is not clawing any more territory in the lives of people. She wants to hear more. She's sitting at his feet. Jesus notices that Martha's cleaning things up. What is this idea of one thing, good portion, will not be taken away? Well, we have the idea in that idea of a good portion. The idea of a portion in the Old Testament, you know, often refers to an inheritance, refers to a share, which refers to an ultimate possession. When Jesus frames this situation, he says, Mary is focused on her good portion. this portion that is like an inheritance that will never spoil. How is that when it comes to cleaning the floors, Martha? The floors will be dirty tomorrow. She's not worried about those things. It doesn't mean that Martha's service doesn't matter. It just means that Mary has prioritized the better thing. Psalm 16:5, the Lord is my chosen portion. 73:26, God is the strength of my heart, my portion forever. Didn't we just read about that? Lamentations 3:24, the Lord is my portion. Portion is not an activity. Portion is God himself outlasting the minute. The lasting inheritance. And he says it will not be taken away. It's the future passive. In other words, it can't be removed. It can't be lost. It can't be stolen. It can't be decayed. This is a reminiscent of lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor trust or moth or rot, rust will destroy. Matthew 6:19-20. The passage emphasizes this, I think, in an extended metaphor. You heard a word about the plates and the chairs and the floor. She's sitting on the floor enjoying something that will never be taken away. Everything you want to do, Martha, will change in a matter of minutes and days. You'll have to redo the same thing over and over again. You're going to have to cook again and clean again and do something and errands. She's sitting at the feet of myself. She's listening to me. She has chosen the good portion, will not pass away, will be here forever. She's listening for me. She has chosen the better portion. It won't be taken away. Martha, your work matters. But the problem is that good thing has become an ultimate thing. If you want to keep working, keep working. But you can't take away from her what matters more than all of your work, Martha. You see the distinction? Tell you, I wish I saw it like that. The temporal versus the eternal, the secondary versus the necessary, the means versus an end. She didn't just choose a better moment, she chose a better treasure. You can gain everything that Martha's working for, and it doesn't matter in the end, but you don't dare miss what Mary's focused on. So as the band is coming up, I think this is important for us because even in this moment of the loss that we're feeling when it comes to the Slagle family, you got to have a right perspective. I think like the Hubble telescope, we want to see the edges of the universe of God's grace and mercy and kindness. Can't see if our perspective's off. And our perspective will be off if we are too busy for Jesus or just too busy in general and yet miss being with Jesus. The for Jesus and with Jesus is where you're going to either capture it or lose it. I've got to say this, we need each other when it comes to that. I need you, you need me. We need to be able to correct one another. Hey, we focused on the right thing. Your anxiety level's high. Could mean that your view of God is low. Could mean that Jesus has become an alibi, taking Jesus hostage to do your will. These are profound lessons. The Hubble telescope didn't need replaced, it needed corrected. I feel like that. Felt like that this week. Maybe you too. This is the beauty of it. In those moments in which you need that correction, I believe Christ comes to me, Dan, put your name in there. Isn't he good? Isn't he kind? I need that. We need that. I'm thankful for it. Would you pray with me? We're thankful, Lord, that we have stories like this. It just seems like a living room interaction between two sisters that's gotten hot. It's more than that. It's certainly a living room interaction, but the truths that are told and the lessons that can be learned are like plumbing the depths of the galaxies to seeing your grace and kindness and exposing our hearts, the dungeon that very often is our hearts. Thank you that you've set us free in Christ through the gospel. Help us to live up to the gospel and learning these lessons and walking in these truths. And help us to be reminded that Grace Fellowship and other God-centered, Christ-exalting churches are there to to help others along. This is a strengthening time so that we can go out and face the colds of the cold wind of a cruel world. Help us to walk in this, and thank you for the truth. Conform us to your image so we make much of you. We pray in Christ's name. Amen.